Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by Bet Online and the expansion. It continues. The Kentucky Derby, the topic of debate, the 143rd run for the roses. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by the incomparable Payne Insider. Payne, you ready to talk a little ponies today, my friend?
I'm not sure. I know we got a good guest. That's all I'm aware of.
Yeah, well, thankfully, you and I don't have to do a lot of the heavy lifting. Chris Felica will be joining us. He of the Bear fame and College Game Day, where a lot of our listeners are probably most familiar with his work. A gambling enthusiast and friend of the community at large. And, of course, Dave Mason from BOL will drop by to talk about exactly what the Kentucky Derby means to the house in a relatively slow period, all things considered. And, Payne, we know we want to focus on the horses. Wanted to get your thoughts real quick on the NFL draft. We know Bet the Board was built on the strength of the National Football League. We'll, of course, get into it in greater detail this fall. In your opinion, who did well? Surprises, reaches, some disappointments? Just, you know, a quick 2-3 minute synopsis, if that.
Okay. I think when we talk about the draft, you know, no one has any clue how these teams drafted, honestly. You know, we'll find that out 2-3 years from now. I think we can at least talk about the fundamentals of drafting. And there's obvious teams like Cleveland and San Francisco. They had that built-in edge coming into the draft with higher picks than other teams. And I thought they did very well, obviously. They got multiple players, traded back, got additional picks for the future. Because there's so many of, you know, both those teams have huge, huge holes all over the field. Those are obvious. I think teams in the midst of turmoil deserve a ton of credit. And I talk about the Buffalo Bills. Both these teams approached the draft. There was uncertainty within the organization, and they chose to handle them completely different. When you talk about Buffalo, Washington, Buffalo had a very good draft in my eyes. I'm looking at this right now. They added, in my opinion, 3 day 1 starters, picked up an additional first round in 18. Washington went the other route. They chose to part ways with their GM before the draft. And when you do that, you wipe away 10, 12 months of scouting work. In that process, you piss off a guy who could potentially compromise your team's thought processes as an organization on players you like on your big board. Those can potentially get leaked to other teams. So I think looking at what they did, the players they drafted, and you factor in those elements with the mess going on internally, I like what Washington did as well.
Mitch Trubisky kind of came out of nowhere going number 2, last thing on it. Bears make the right move, or you think it was a definite leap of faith for a team desperate to find a franchise quarterback?
It's the Bears. I don't want to pile on Trubisky. I think that's what everyone's doing. I know it's the polarizing position. It delivers the clicks, the views. But even the uninformed can talk about a quarterback. You know, so I try to not lump myself in with that mess too often unless I have something really, really strong. I think if you want to bash the Bears, you know, you look at the rest of their picks. Round 2, you draft a tight end. And regardless of the player drafted, you had holes at more valuable positions. And because you traded away so many picks, you knew you weren't going to have a ton of opportunity. So you look at this, like you have Zach Miller already. Yes, a little injury prone. But in the offseason, you signed Deion Sims from the Dolphins for $18 million over 3 years, and he's the blocking inline guy who's supposed to remove some of that physical work off Miller's plate so he can stay healthy, focus on catching the ball. So you drafted a third-string tight end in round 2. And then you talk about the GM, Ryan Pace. He's that cool, hip, young guy. And so, like, what was he doing? Like, just watching social media, and all of a sudden you draft this running back, Tariq Cohen, because he's making, like, backflip catches on the internet? Like,
those were pretty impressive catches, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, but he's a fringe top 25 running back in this specific draft that you drafted in the 4th round. He's 5'8", 165 pounds. You know, Donnell Pumphrey, like, he's still on the board. He's a fringe top 10 running back in this draft. And it's clear, right? The questions that everyone had about Pumphrey or caused some concern was his size. Well, that wasn't a concern of your organization if you drafted an even smaller guy. So it wasn't just about getting fleeced in the draft with the quarterback. There's a ton of questions with the rest of this draft. I think it stunk. But you know what? It's a quarterback-driven league, so if Trubisky somehow turns out, no one's going to remember what else took place. You know?
It's always about chasing the dragon, and that's about the extent of time we have for NFL talk, but wanted to get your thoughts on the draft. I'm sure Dave will offer up some sentiments on exactly what the draft meant to the shop in regards to those props. As always, you can follow Payne on Twitter, at Payne Insider. You can follow me there as well, at Todd Furman. And of course, the podcast, at Bet the Board Pod. Officially Derby Central for this weekend. A great preview coming up on the site, if it's not already there, from Kentucky Derby Jay. A lot of people know him as the man who pegged I'll Have Another a few years ago with me. He's not only going to be here for the Derby, but with us all month long, covering the Preakness, the Belmont, and maybe if things break the right way, we'll get him on one of these fine podcasts to talk about the horses. But without further ado, now, since neither of us consider ourselves heavy hitters when it comes to horses or even followers of the sport on a weekly basis, we brought in someone that can best be described as a, well, we'll call him a jack of all trades. He's brought gambling to College Game Day and does it all at ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter, at Chris Felica. All right, Chris, before we actually get into breaking down the Derby field, we want the single best horse racing story you've been a part of, whether it's in an OTB across this fine country, international, or right here in lovely Las Vegas.
Oh, one? Oh, boy. I think the funniest one involves myself and Hank Goldberg at the 2004 Belmont Stakes when Smarty Jones was going for the Triple Crown. Hank and I were both on Birdstone that day, and he lit up the tote board, and Hank and I are basically exchanging like hugs and high fives in the garden terrace at Belmont after it's basically everyone's cheering for Smarty Jones down the stretch, and here I am at a table, you're yelling go get him Edgar with Birdstone in Prado reels him in the final eighth, and I'm going crazy because I cash. I mean, I had the triple every which way, pick four. I mean, I just crushed the race, and then I see Hank, I knew, loved Birdstone as well, and we're exchanging pleasantries in the garden terrace when everybody else is completely somber. So that's the funniest from a bet standpoint. The worst, I would say, was it would have been it would have been May 2003 or May 2004. I forget the exact year, but there was like a 7-day carryover at Hollywood Park in the pick six. At the time, I didn't have a ton of money, so I put together like a $96 pick six ticket. And I mean, it's literally like a $3 or $4 or $5 million carryover. I don't even forget the exact amount that wound up being in the pool. So I am alive. Basically, I'm like 1 by 2 by 3 by 2. Like, it's a slim ticket, and I hit the first five races with one favorite coming in. I mean, there I'm talking like $30 horses, $20 horses. I mean, like, and I'm alive basically with two horses in the last race. There was an entry. It was a Mullins Baffert entry that was like 4 to 5, and I don't have this entry on my ticket at all. And I have a Mike Harrington horse, and I had another horse by the name of Aaron Asher was the name of the horse who was dropping in from like maiden specials to maiden claiming, and the horse was 20-something to 1, was on the rail, and then the other horse, the Harrington horse, has the lead basically as they're making the turn into the stretch. He starts fading. Aaron Asher, the horse who broke from the rail, books low and then makes a huge middle move and starts contending and then flattens out. So I got beat out of about $3 billion in the final leg of a pick six at Hollywood. And then the ultimate kick in the you-know-what was next start out for Aaron Asher. He came back and won it like 17-1. So I had the right horse that day, just didn't win. And then the real coup d'etat of the story is I think this, either his next start or his start after that, he broke down in his race, and I think he got euthanized. So they're very sad tale of Aaron Asher.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, listening to horse racing stories, the sweat, especially when you get to that final leg of a pick five or some of the major exotics out there, a little bit different when you're trying to coax home that late night Hawaii college football game for that fifth or eighth leg of a parlay. I don't think a lot of folks listening have ever had the chance to capture $3 million if the right horse got to the finish line in check.
Yeah, I was literally at the OTB in Bristol. This was before I was able to get TVG or anything like that. I don't even know if it was around in 2000. It probably was. I just couldn't get it on my cable system in Connecticut. But I was sitting at the OTB in Bristol, like shaking, like, oh my God! And I was just completely despondent when I got beat. I think I wound up getting like $6,000 for 5 out of 6, but $6,000 versus $3 million. It's not exactly what I'd call a consolation.
It almost becomes a pittance wage in the grand scheme. And having spent time in Bristol myself, I'm almost afraid to ask you to describe what the OTB in Bristol, even on a big race day, looks like. So I'm going to save you that level of degeneracy in any capacity there. When we look at the Kentucky Derby coming up, obviously the 143rd running this Saturday, I saw one writer describe this year's field as a quote-unquote kaleidoscopic array of equine talents with many different patterns of talents and defects to ponder. For someone who gets as involved in the ponies as you do you prefer a wide open field or one with like one clear-cut favorite that often provides value in a laundry list of other horses?
I like a wide open race. I like a field like this year where, I mean, your favorite's 4-1, and I don't necessarily like the favorite, but I think there are horses out there where, I mean, I think there are some horses whose form can improve. I like a big wide open field where their values and overlays throughout the card. I mean, you look at the last 2 years, you haven't had a horse longer than 10-1. Crack the try. I mean, you've had favorites win the last 4 years, and you're talking 2-1, 5-2 type of. I mean, Orb was 5.5-1 a couple of years back, but other than American Pharaoh, California Chrome, and Nyquist were all 5-2 or shorter, and didn't really return much in terms of the exotic. So I like this type of field where you've got a bunch of horses that I think can win, and at the same time, you've got a bunch of horses that I don't think can win, and you can potentially throw 7 or 8 horses out and not even have to worry about covering the bottom rungs of your exotics with those horses.
Well, you mentioned the fact that you haven't had a lot of those long shots hit, you know, even the bottom legs of the tries or the supers or anything like that. We've actually seen 4 straight favorites and now win the Derby, the longest stretch going all the way back to the 1970s. And you read some of these theories, Chris. The grading for the Derby points has changed, eliminating some of the sprinters from disrupting the pace. What do you feel that this is attributed to? Do you think it's a strength and odds making or a real change in the way that we're trying to build up that 20 horse field?
I think it's more the way that I think there is a lot to the theory of the point system and how, like you had said, these horses later, the races later on being weighted more, and you're getting a lot more of the cheap speed out, and you're getting, quote unquote, the better horses, your favorites, who get a more comfortable, a better, easier trip on or near the lead, and they're finding that they're just so inferior, so superior from a speed figure perspective that they're just better and no one's able to make up any ground. The interesting thing, though, is if you go, like you were talking about the favorites, yeah, from what, 1980 through 99, you didn't have a single favorite. And since 2000, you've had 8 favorites, but at the same time, you've also had 5 winners that were at least 15-1. Like before this little stretch, I mean, you had Animal Kingdom lit up the board. Super Saver wasn't a favorite, but he wasn't a long shot, but he was a little bit of a price. You've had horses that have been a price win recently, and even underneath it, I mean, Commanding Curve was a huge price. I mean, Dallas Stewart's had a couple of big prices that have come underneath, but I think the fact that the horses who are peaking later, more mature, more bred for distances, the preps get longer, and you get closer to the Derby, I think you're finding that this new way of coming up with the point system is really favoring the horses that are more bred for distance and more bred to develop later.
Yeah, the aforementioned Animal Kingdom will always hold a special place in my heart. It's kind of back to when I first started getting a chance to do some national radio, and it was with Doug Gottlieb on ESPN Radio. radio, pegged Animal Kingdom. Really didn't know what the hell I was doing. Still don't, you know, a number of years later, but it'll always be my claim to fame in horse racing. It might be the only time I've ever able to capture a long shot. You mentioned...
So you and Larry Colmus share a favorite same horse, because that was Larry Colmus' first Derby, and that everyone always asks him every year, what's your favorite Derby, or what's your favorite race to call? Who's your favorite horse? And I know it used to be Holy Bull, but now it's Animal Kingdom, because he won the first Derby that he ever called.
It might be the only time that I sat there truly glued to the edge of my seat going, man, this may actually give me a little bit of credibility. Little did I know years later, doesn't matter how many winners you pick, you still can't get credibility in this industry. But I digress completely. And you mentioned price being obviously an important component when you're looking to build your Derby card. And we'll get into the actual feel in a few minutes. What are some of the other elements you look at? I mean, breeding, training, bloodlines, and of course, the last thing in this area that I think, you know, probably relevant for Saturday's race, the weather and how much of a role that could potentially play if we're talking about a sloppy track at Churchill.
Yeah, I think, at least I have noticed, and I have no scientific theory of knowing whether it's true or not, I think breeding has really become less of an impact as we've gotten on throughout the years. I mean, you look at a horse like Nyquist. I mean, his dam side was basically a Louisiana-bred claimer. It was like the best thing to get on his bottom side. Uncle Mo, his horse has never really won past a mile on his 16th or so, and that was the profile of your Derby winner last year. I mean, Pioneer of the Nile wasn't exactly seen as a distance sire, and here comes American Pharoah out of Pioneer of the Nile, and he's wins a Triple Crown. So I think the traditional theories of like AP Indy, the FIPS, and the classic breeding, I think those days are those days may be a little bit gone with the tendency to breed a little bit more towards speed. I always like to try and anticipate with my handicapping is I try and project the pace of the race and how I think the race is going to play out. Will there be a fast pace? How many horses will be on the lead? Will the pace be contested? Horses that maybe drew poorly, like in the Derby, especially in a 20-horse field, you draw post 1, 2, and 3. That's essentially a death sentence from being able to win. I mean, you might be able to get up for third, but being stuck down in there is a terrible thing. And then the weather. It's a 20-horse field that's probably going to be run on a sloppy track. How do these horses handle kick back from mud? Does someone come splashing down the center of the track like Orb did a couple of years ago? Or does Smarty Jones air? Or do you get a big – I mean, remember a couple of years back, Mind That Bird, it was on a sloppy track, the biggest fluke result ever in Derby history, whatever, 50-1 or whatever it was. I mean, that came on an off track. So a lot of times you just get some weird, quirky results when the weather conditions aren't exactly at their best.
And you mentioned post positioning. I mean, you read some of the comments from Mike Battaglia, who sets all the opening lines at Churchill. And not for me to criticize someone who does this every single day. Do you feel like post position, should be reflected in prices? Or do you think that creates some opportunity where you as a handicapper just go, you know what, 1, 2, 3, I'm going to eliminate it. If you're starting on the outside, similar to Patch coming from that 20 hole, I'm going to be able to eliminate it. And it makes my job slightly easier, of course, easier relative term, to try and identify the core horses that you're going to look to tie into a number of your wagers.
I like the fact that it factors into the morning line odds factor into the post. I would do that because it's a huge factor. I mean you're looking to look at a lead. It was what, 20-1 or 31 on the morning line, whatever he was. I mean, he's got no shot at winning. He's a stone cold closer. He's going to basically just have to lap the field from take all the way outside. There's no way he's going to get up and win. I mean, he'll probably go off at 30 or 40-1. I mean Thunder Snow. I mean, you take him from the two hole. I mean, horses from Dubai. I mean, no one's ever finished better than fifth. He's stuck down on the inside. I don't think anybody's won from two since the firm. So, I mean, it's been 30 years since someone from post one or two won. So I would certainly make those horses longer. Fast and accurate, it's a non-factor in the race. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter what his odds are. But it's funny. I was having this conversation with a bunch of people this morning and last night. I mean, if you like Irish War Cry, and the big common thing, oh, no one's ever won from post 17. Yeah, well, no one ever won from post 19 until I'll Have Another did. Big Brown couldn't win because he was in post 20. He won. I mean, I think a lot of these historical Derby post position facts nowadays really don't really don't matter much. I mean, so you're telling me I love Irish war cry if he's in post 16 or post 18, but post 17, no one's ever won from there. There's no way I can play him from there. So I mean, outside is where you want to be. So if you like Irish war cry, if you liked him before the draw yesterday, I certainly would say stay on him, even though he's in post 17 and your old derby adages of no one's won from post 17. I wouldn't even worry about that.
And you mentioned Irish war cry, of course, one of, we'll call him four co-favorites, at least from a morning line standpoint, priced at 6-1 right now. We look at the overall favorite classic umpire, 4-1, the Arkansas Derby winner past three rivals in the final furlong there. And then two horses nestled between them, Always Dreaming, a Todd Pletcher entrant at 5-1. Interesting note on Pletcher. One winner in 45 chances in the Kentucky Derby, but I did find it fascinating, Chris, that he hasn't had any close as an actual betting favorite. So it'll be interesting to try and see where the number settles here. And a horse that from folks that I've spoken to seem to like quite a bit amongst this quartet of favorites, McCracken, also listed at 5-1. When we look at these four favorites, is there a particular horse that you feel is better than the rest or gives you ample opportunity maybe to tie into the top of those exotics?
I think it's Irish War Cry because of the outside draw. I think he, of all those four horses that you mentioned, he is the horse that I am most confident in that he will run his race. I mean, he's won at Laurel, he's won at Gulfstream, he's won at Aqueduct. I said before about the distance. I don't know how much distance breeding factors in nowadays, but it certainly doesn't help to be bred by Curlin, who is one of the better distance horses of this generation. Again, he was a horse that drew poorly in the Derby. I think it was his fourth or fifth career lifetime start in the Derby. Got buried down inside for the two post. I think finished third that year, and then wound up winning the Preakness. Nearly won the Belmont, won the Breeders' Cup Classic. So his bloodlines are terrific. He's shown he can win from on the lead, from off the lead, and I think it's up to Rajiv Miraj to. If I could give Rajiv a little bit of a homework assignment, I would watch the 2001 Derby and see what Gary Stevens and Point Given did that year, and I would not do that. Because I think Gary, they were a little bit too close to the lead on a suicidal speed duel with a Song and a Prayer. He got strung really wide around that first turn, and he was done. So I would take back if I'm Irish War Cry and come get him late. I worry a little bit about Classic Empire. I know a lot of people were impressed with how he closed and how he finished in Arkansas, but I kind of take a little bit of a contrarian stance with him. Shocking, I know.
We know your track record when it comes to handicapping some of the other sports, so I'm glad that it's consistent into the ponies the same way you look at the football board each week.
Because that horse that he beat just got up. I mean, he had to reach basically the bottom, and his speed figure wasn't that high to get up over a horse, Conquest My Money, who balked at the gate, didn't want to go in, cut out all the fractions, and then he literally got up in one of the last couple jumps of the race. Conquest My Money was beaten, I think, four or five lengths by Hans out in New Mexico in the Sunland Derby. I'm not feeling it. I actually read this morning a very interesting note in the DRF Derby supplement, which I found pretty amazing because Mark Cassie's a really good trainer, but 3-year-old routes is not his forte. You go back over the last 5 years, I read he's 4-86 in stakes races, 3-year-old stake races on the dirt and routes. I mean that's including the Arkansas win for him. So is he a guy who's won four of these races in the last 5 years gonna win back to back races now with Classic? I don't know. He's won on the Churchill down service before, so he's got that going for him. Julian Le Perreux has not had very good success in the Derby. He had a terrible trip with Union Rags a few years back. He was on one of the longer priced favorites, dialed in 2011, finished eighth. So he's a guy who has not had a lot of success in Louisville. So I'm going to stand against Classic Empire, and I'm going to stand against Always Dreaming as well. You touched on Pletcher not having a favorite, but he's had horses that have been top two, top three choices, top four choices on the betting angle. One of my favorite notes with Pletcher is, if you go back since 2007, he's run 31 horses at the Derby. 29 with a jockey other than Calvin Burrell, 2 with Calvin Burrell. With Calvin Burrell up, he's got a win, and another top three finish. With the other 29, he's got zero wins and one top three finish. If you look at him and Johnny Velazquez, I think they've had five horses that have been among the top four wagering choices. The best finish for any of those horses is 10th. This isn't Belmont. This isn't Gulfstream. This isn't Saratoga. Don't get sucked into the short-priced odds with very well-known connections with a horse who, oh, by the way, drew on the inside with post five. I mean, I don't know what you guys think, but I think he's got no choice now with the way he's been working all week. He's been very headstrong. I think he's gunning for the lead, and I think he's going to get pressed around from Fast and Accurate, from State of Honor, a couple of the horses. I think he's a total toss. So, I mean, if you, like I said, if you're looking for the four horses there, those four top choices, I like Irish War Cry the most.
Be very interesting to try and see. And then, obviously, when we go from those four horses, it drops down to a group of ponies in that 15-1 range, highlighted by Gervin, Gunavera, and Hence. Hence, you mentioned earlier, Sunland Derby winner, speed figure, higher than anyone in the race. And you look at the field he was able to beat in New Mexico, he's a guy that kind of catches my eye. And I don't claim to be an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but if I'm looking at this group of 15-1 horses, he might be the one that I zeroed in on. Is there one in this particular price range that really catches your eye?
Well, I'm going to go full disclosure here right now. I'm probably the worst person to ask about Hence because I am holding a future on him at 150-1. So you can add a zero to that morning line, and those are my odds. But I'm a little bit worried because it sounds like with the way he's worked and the way the Sunland Derby has produced next out winners and really good performances next out, I get the sense that he's going to kind of be that wise guy horse, and maybe he could certainly overcome that. He doesn't know that that people are betting him. I mean, but his style fits. But again, you've got to worry about. I mean, as good of a trainer as Steve Asmussen is, he's another guy that's never won the Derby. 13 starters, he's got two of them in the money. I mean, no one sent out more Derby starters and without a win than Asmussen has. But I think the style that this horse possesses, again, he ran a good race at Churchill as a maiden, which I always think is something that I look for in the Derby. You don't necessarily have to break maiden there or win an allowance, but if you run well on that Churchill surface, I always like put a little check mark next to a horse like that because I think that certainly helps their chance. You hit on Gunavera. I mean, we all have our friend at the track, friend in the sports book, friend at the casino, who's the mush. You picture the typical racing fan, like imagine what you would envision the typical racing fan look like, and this is my buddy. He loves Gunavera, and I don't know the last time he cashed a ticket.
We have to be careful about that mush stuff, though, because Payne calls me the mush on this podcast all the time. So, you know, I have to be very careful when I share my opinions because they have a knack for not coming through. So that's why I kind of defer to him to pick all the winners, especially during football season.
I mean, he got Lady Eli beat at Keeneland a couple of weeks ago in a race that she had no business losing. So he likes Gunavera. So if you like Gunavera, full disclosure, the mush is all in on him. So be very, very careful. I mean, if you look at some other one horse that you was among that group of 5-1 that I thought would be more 10-15-1 was McCracken. I mean, he's been a little bit, his training at Churchill Downs has been great. He just completely throw out the bluegrass. His form was good before then. Again, I don't know what he's beaten at Tampa and some of those races at Churchill, but his trainer, Ian Wilkes, is kind of an old school trainer. He's been with Carl Nasker, who's had success at Churchill Downs in the Derby, winning with Street Sense, winning with Unbridled. And I think maybe throw that bluegrass out with him. Again, I don't necessarily know if he's going to win, but I think he'll run well. I think that race may have been used as a true prep. Don't worry about winning. We know you're in the field. Just get a little bit of a foundation under you. You've missed a couple races. You've missed some time training. Get some fitness in. That way you're ready to peak the first Saturday in May. I was surprised to see him at 5-1. Gervin was a horse you mentioned at a 15-1. I wouldn't use him at all. I think Louisiana preps were poor this year. He's been battling foot injuries, working in certain types of bar shoes. His figures are light. I think he's a throw out. So among those 15-1 horses, I would like Hence. And Gormley is a horse on the outside. Again, we've talked about five of the last 6 years, the Derby's been won by a horse post 13 and out. And Gormley's been ridiculed because the Santa Anita time was slow and the figure was light and they crawled home. But remember, this is Victor Espinosa, who's won, I think, 5 of the last 9 Triple Crown races. The Mosses and John Sheriff's trainer are great horse people. And if you want to knock buyer figures and he's got a light figure, he can't win, well, I'll have another who didn't have a great top buyer coming out of California. Nyquist, I think, had a 93 top route buyer coming out of California. Giacomo didn't have a great route buyer prior to the Derby. All three of those horses came out of California and wound up winning the Derby. So I think Gormley possesses the right style. I know he's going to get the distance. I know he can go 1.25 miles. Maybe he can grind out a win, but I think Gormley is 15-1. You might even get a little bit of a better price on him because so many people are down on that Santa Anita race, thinking the time was slow. But I wouldn't discount Gormley's chances at all.
And from the horses price there, 15-1. Well, we may as well start with some of the group at 20-1 into the long shots. I know you mentioned a couple guys that were throwaways, so to speak. Is there anybody that we should be looking to try and include in the bottom end of our exotics to really get that payday, hoping they can hit the board in the try position or maybe coming home fourth from some of the real prohibitive long shots out there?
Well, again, I think Battle of Midway, the horse that was second in that Santa Anita race, is a horse, again, very well-bred. And he's got another one of those old Derby adages, the curse of Apollo, only one horse is won without being going unraced to two, 1882 Apollo. And Battle of Midway didn't make his debut until January. So basically, you're telling me that if he's I'm looking for a horse that maybe debuted in December, if he's Gervin and he debuted use December 16th as opposed to January 15th or a month later, there's no way that he can win because he didn't hit the track until a month later. You look at Battle of Midway, he has a very natural progression here, in my opinion. He broke maiden first asking, put him into stakes race right away, ran third to Iliad, who was a good horse. He just got retired, unfortunately. Didn't expect him to win that second race. Third race out, goes in a nice little allowance race with Reach the World, who was a very nice Bob Baffert horse that unfortunately had a training accident and got euthanized. He was probably going to be Baffert's Belmont horse. He won that race and then came back and was on the lead, basically, in the Santa Anita Derby in a race that I don't necessarily think he's going to be on the lead in this race. I don't think he's a need-to-lead type. If he runs back to how he ran in his debut or how he won the optional allowance there, that's the right type of style for this race. And again, talking about the bar, his top bar is, what, 88? I mean, but horse that four lifetime starts and maybe he's set for a peak effort and 30-1 on the morning line with Hollendorfer and Pratt, those guys win a ton of races out in California. I would certainly include him, and I mentioned earlier Sonneteer was a horse that I would use. Like I said, if you like Classic Empire, don't you? I mean, Sonneteer, that he hasn't broken his maiden yet, but he was 2 lengths behind Classic Empire in Arkansas. He gets added distance. He was 100-something to 1 and was second in the Rebel, and he was fourth in the Arkansas Derby and closing. But that extra 1/8 of a mile, maybe he can get third or fourth. J-Boy's Echo, Adell Roman's horse, who's 20-1. Roman's always seems to run well in the Derby. I mean, he's had 3 horses crack the super, but none of them really were top choices. They've all been 15-20 to 1 or longer. So Del Romans is a horse in big races that, I mean, you look at his, I mean, he popped a triple, he's one of the few horses in the field who actually popped a triple digit buyer back in the Gotham. Again, he's total mercy of the pace, total closer, but I think he's someone that you would have to include as well. So I think Battle of Midway, Sonneteer, J-Boy Zecker, ironically 11, 12, 13 in the gate would be 3 horses, 20, 30, and even longer than that to one that would certainly be worth inclusion on your bottom levels of your tries and supers.
All right, Chris, it's Saturday morning. You're walking into that fateful OTB in Bristol looking for your exacta and your try. You know, we'll open up the forum to you. I mean, you can obviously box 4 or 5 horses if so inclined. What's your race card look like come Saturday?
I think I would box, if you're looking just like a 4-horse exacta box, I don't like playing just straight try boxes. I think those tickets get a little too costly. I like keying some certain horses, but if you're looking for just four horses, the box and the exacta, I would go. Hence, Irish War Cry, Battle of Midway, and Gormley. What is that? I think 8-11, 17-18. I think those are the four that, like I said, I think Irish War Cry is most apt to run his race, which will put him first or second. And I think one of those other horses that are 15-1 or longer can pop into the exacta. Now, if you're looking for tries and super, I think I would stand with Irish War Cry. I would key him and wheel him in certain spots. And the tries and the supers, and then underneath use a bunch of horses. Basically, so I'd play 17, and then I'd put probably Battle of Midway, J-Boy's Echo, Gormley, Hence, maybe those four horses in one of the other spots in the exotics, and then in the other spot I'd use most of the horses. The horses that I won't use in the exotics right now, I would not use. We're not used looking at Leaf for third. Maybe he can finish fourth. I'd throw Thunder Snow out completely. I'd throw Fast and Accurate out completely. I'd throw Untrapped out completely. I'm throwing Always Dreaming out completely. I'm throwing State of Honor out completely. So basically, everybody with the first seven post positions, I'm throwing out completely from third and fourth. So I mean, that basically gives you a little bit of an idea. Everyone else after that, I think, is from post eight and out. I think everybody is somewhat usable at least for third. I mean, a wrap would probably be a little bit of a surprise, but I wouldn't be surprised if Patch cracked a triple at 30-1 from the outside, making his fourth lifetime start again. He's another one who broke his maiden and ran a pretty good race in Louisiana. It wasn't, like I said, a great field or a great figure, but maybe he clunks up for a piece late. Practical Joke, I'm not a huge fan of his. Someone I know and respect very well likes him. I don't necessarily, but I think, as I just went through, I think there are probably eight or nine horses that you could probably throw out exactly from one of your spots in the exotic, the super, and the try, and make the ticket somewhat affordable.
Hey, it really becomes a language that I think a lot of our bettors and our listeners that maybe gravitate more towards football will have to figure out a little bit as they go. And of course, the Derby is the crown jewel of the racing weekend at Churchill. But when you look at the schedule on Friday with the Oaks and the rest of the card on Saturday, is there any other races that you have your eye on, at least early on, that might be worth a small value play or something, even from a casual fan's perspective, a race truly worth watching?
I think the Oaks on Friday is certainly going to be worth watching, and I'll be quite honest with you, I haven't run Saturday's full card yet, just because I want to get a better gauge for the weather before I really try and dive into the Woodford and some of those other turf races, because it would be a real shame if those turf races either come off or they just complete bogs, and that will really affect the field composition. But I think the Oaks has a chance to be a really good race. I mean, Paradise Woods is a horse that absolutely freaked in the Santa Anita Oaks, and Richard Mandel is a trainer who, his horses typically don't progress. Once they get good, they usually stay good. So I'd be very, I think she's going to be really, really hard to beat in the Oaks, and I would certainly look at Daddy's Little Darling, the 12 horse, way outside, as a horse who ran pretty well in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies last year. Is a closer, has won at Churchill before, has run well on a muddy track. I think she's a horse that I think is 20-1 in the morning line I'm looking at. She's someone that I think could come late and maybe pick up the bottom rung of the exacta. So, I mean, I would certainly think Paradise Woods is a very key contender, and then Daddy's Little Darling as a price in the Oaks on Friday.
Now, one last question before I let you go. I'm going to make you commissioner of horse racing for a day. We know the sport has been in decline. It really captures our attention, especially from the Derby on through the Belmont, assuming we have a Triple Crown candidate, and maybe, you know, in October, November, when we have the Breeders' Cup. What do you think the sport needs to do if there's going to be a resurrection in store? You read so much about the associations and them taking out of the pools. Yes, that impacts prices and some of the betting, but it just doesn't relate horse racing on the whole to some of the younger generations out there. What can we do to try and revive the sport of kings and make sure that it's relevant more so than just four weekends throughout the course of the year?
Yeah, I think they're trying that with a lot of these gimmick wagers now, these rainbow sixes and jackpot pick six, where you can put together a 10-cent pick six ticket and use it. You can play a $20 ticket with a bunch of different combinations, and if you're lucky and you're the single winner, you're taking home stacks. But traditional horse players hate those bets. They're terrible bets. They're huge takeouts. But I think people see the potential jackpot on the line, and wow, it's a chance to get rich quick. And really, I mean, the only time I'll play one of those tickets is on closing day if it's a mandatory carryover to me, a mandatory payout, and it's upwards or whatever. Then I'll play it. But during the meet, I wouldn't even look at it because I just don't like it. I think the racing industry itself really needs to take a long, hard look on medication. I mean, racing people out there know, bettors know who the perceived unscrupulous trainers are, and then all of a sudden you see certain guys get banned. Like Rick Dutra was banned for basically life, and then you got some other trainers out there right now who are just as guilty as he was of some medication violations, and they're still out there training. They get basically slapped on the wrist. So you don't want to. They're in a hard spot because you don't want to bite the hand that feeds you. But at the same time, I think when you get some crazy results in races, or you get unbelievable form turnaround. I mean, Lava Man was a $20,000 or $30,000 claimer, I think, at one point, and then he gets claimed and turns into a Grade One winner. I mean, how does that happen? I mean, I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but for a horse that was perceived to have such little value, or seen as such not seen to be as a very good horse, and you're risking a horse in a lower to a middle level claiming race, it turns into a Grade One winner. I mean, maybe the horse just got good, maybe he got matured, maybe they figured out he had something medically wrong and they cured it. But I think better integrity, I think, is something that a lot of people out there are looking. I mean, I saw someone make a comment yesterday about a certain horse winning at Belmont, and like, yeah, everybody knew this horse was winning except for me. He was bet down to like 3-1 from a 7-1 morning line. So sometimes when you see early money and you worry about things like that, you kind of worry a little bit about things like that. But I think the younger crowd and all these gimmick wagers and jackpot, they're attracting those people, which is good. And then medication integrity there.
Well, if there's a place to hurl wild accusations, I mean, you're more than welcome to come on here and do that anytime you like, whether it's related to horse racing, college football, or any other sport where there's a number that we can try and bend into. Can't thank you enough. I know it's a busy weekend for you, for jumping on with us. And for folks, they can always follow you on Twitter at Chris Felica. And I know Payne and I are counting the days down till we see you Saturday morning with Kirk and the boys for College Game Day. So enjoy the off time, hopefully well-deserved, that you'll get coming up soon, and really looking forward to watching the race on Saturday. Can't thank you enough for all the analysis.
Thanks for having me on anytime, guys.
Man, that's a lot of stuff to take in there, Payne, almost like a foreign language. So hopefully, you know, you were taking copious notes there to get yourself ready for race day.
He's the MF and horse whisperer. I mean, I kid you not, I had notes on this, and I just said, you know what, I'm just going to throw in the towel here because he's got this. There's nothing I could contribute to that.
Yeah.
To that section of the podcast. That was unbelievable.
Let's be honest here. No one came to listen to you and I break down the ponies, so that's why we bring on the expert. Felica, one of the best. We know he's passionate about the industry. Kind of shows his versatility. You hate to use the draft day cliche. He's the Swiss Army knife. College football, college basketball, little horses. I won't claim to have half of that knowledge that he provided. You ever been into the horses yourself, buddy?
Occasionally. I like to go maybe 2 times a year. Took my pops to Vegas about a year and a half ago. Spent some time doing that at the Wynn. It's a good time. It's discouraging, though. Like, no matter where you sit or occupy yourself for the race itself, it's, you go in there and you're like, okay, like, this is a little sketchy. I don't know if, you know, I'm not in this for the degenerate factor of it. So it's like, this is what guys look like who bet the horses every day. I don't want any part of this.
So I mean, they say all stereotypes are versed in a little bit of truth, and there's no better apropos description and or representation than I'm sure if you go to Gulfstream on a Wednesday afternoon for the third race in the middle of the day, and that's the clientele that you're going to see from start to finish.
Can I play into the shtick here? Gulfstream a little bit different. It's a little, little higher end.
Gulfstream, very simple. I mean, I'll say that. I mean, I've been to Del Mar, I've been to Santa Anita. Those are a little bit different. I guess when we talk about it, and of course, we're going to alienate a lot of our listeners, that if they're going to Los Alamitos to watch the quarter horses or Louisiana Downs, I mean, I grew
dog
up
tracks.
Myself.
Dog tracks are another thing, too.
Yeah, Greyhound. We won't even get into the Greyhounds. That's another level of degeneracy. I mean, I grew up in Chicago, so we had Arlington Park there. I'd only been there, I think, once or twice for the Arlington Millions. And there was a stretch. I think I was, how do I had to be, you know, 20, 21, somewhere. I can't even remember what you have to be to legally bet on horses. I feel like it's 18, but maybe I'm wrong. And so I would go to the off-track betting on days that I wasn't bartending or working in construction. And I would come home, and on my dresser, I would have slips of discarded losers. And I was trying to bet the chalk, exactas, and tries. And I think that's the only time my parents really felt they needed an intervention for my gambling, because they were worried I was headed down a dark path that I might not be able to come back from.
I've actually been to Arlington Park. It's kind of where I got into this, actually. Lived in Chicago for about 18 months. Weather was just, I couldn't deal with the weather. So got out of there quickly. But that's kind of where I got into horse racing, at Arlington Park. I'm actually looking forward to the Derby, though.
No, it should be a very interesting race. I mean, will you be drinking bourbon? We know Woodford Reserve is the official bourbon. I mean, I wasn't sure if you're a mint julep guy. I know it's typically 7 ice cubes and a little bit of Tito's, but do we switch at least for a few hours on Saturday?
No. It depends really what kind of mood I'm in, and I don't venture too far outside of the comfort zone.
Shocker that you don't go far out of the comfort zone.
Maybe if I'm at the race just to feel a part of it, I'll get the initial mandatory, you know, mint julep or something like that. But I don't want goddamn lettuce in my drink. If I want roughage, like, I'll have a salad. I just don't want it in my liquid beverage. So
yeah,
it's vodka if I'm drinking.
Speaking about being at the race, and then we'll get to Dave Mason, who I know is waiting anxiously in the wings. Are we going to make a call and get Bet the Board on Millionaire's Row? I mean, I can see you in a pink seersucker suit alongside Aaron Rodgers walking to the window, scoffing at his wagers, you know, plunking down a few shekels, and having that bourbon to pick a winner or two. We may have to get Bet the Board out to Kentucky Derby in the next couple of years.
You portray that my pockets are very deep quite often. I'm just...
I didn't say very deep. I said your depth of knowledge here. I'm not telling you to walk up to the window with a $1 million briefcase over there. I don't want to try and convey that image of you.
Thank God. Thank God. Although, speaking of Aaron Rodgers, what an upgrade.
I haven't seen what he's done off the field.
Oh, yeah. He's got like the SI swimsuit model, like the hottest chick who plays in Baywatch, the blonde chick. She's supposed
really?
To portray,
yeah. That was the score for Rodgers.
Yes.
That's pretty solid.
Dumped Olivia Munn, and then back on the saddle quickly.
Yeah, oh, she's top shelf. But you know me, I'm a little impartial to some of those, you know, Ivy League-type chicks that can read and write. So Olivia Munn, for me, is right up there, you know, in that Natalie Portman class. I need a girl that can hold her own, fire back, you know, some witty banter from time
to
time.
This girl graduated from Georgetown, was actually a golfer on the team, so she's got that element to her a little bit,
right,
too.
Well,
so she's got some smarts, and she's got a little sporty to her as well.
I have to rescind that comment then, because I have seen her in the way she looks physically. Top shelf talent, good score for Aaron Rodgers. We can only hope that that relates to his focus on the football field. But like we said, we're not here to talk about football. It's all about the Kentucky Derby. We bring on Dave Mason from BetOnline. Of course, as always, you can follow Dave on Twitter at DaveMasonBOL. And Dave, clearly the Kentucky Derby is the topic at hand. But before we get there, the NFL draft recently completed. You came on the podcast, talked about how there were some potentially big decisions, a lot of movement. Who were some of the biggest winners and losers for the house, and how did Handel look overall this year?
Yeah, Handel was awesome. It was off the charts. Exceeded our expectations. You know, when we spoke last week, I was telling you how great the early action was, but it just kept coming. People were NFL bettors who didn't see since the Super Bowl. They were coming back to get in on the action. Some good signups as a result from it. Overall, I mean, the action was for Thursday's props. We saw 3.5 times more action than last year, than 2016, and over 5 times more action than 2015. I mean, even Friday's props, we put up about 10 to 12 props for Friday, and those saw almost as much action as 2016 Thursday. The Christian McCaffrey prop, that was the most bet prop, the over-under. That prop saw more bets than the Yankees versus Red Sox money line that same night. So that just gives you an idea how much people are betting this NFL draft. It used to be such a little niche event. You know, you put the odds up and you take some bets. You win a little, you lose a little. But now it's a pretty serious betting event, and we're taking it more serious because of that. As far as who the public won SEC over 10.5 in the first round, Bama over 4.5 in the first round, LSU over 2.5 in the first round, Deshaun Watson under 12.5, Trubisky under 10.5, which they won easily. Excuse me. The house, we won on under 2.5 running backs. That was actually the biggest need of the weekend. Mike Williams under 10.5, under 3.5 quarterbacks first round, and John Ross under 18.5, which is an easy cover for us.
Dave, we now know the NFL draft has become a major event for Bet Online. As we transition to Saturday at Churchill Downs for the 143rd Kentucky Derby, how big of an event is that for the house?
It's always been big. I mean, Kentucky Derby's, you know, it's probably one of the top 5 events of the year as far as sign-ups and people coming back, you know, reactivating their accounts. You know, after, of course, this kickoff to the NFL season, Super Bowl, obviously, March Madness. You know, Kentucky Derby's right there as far as sign-ups are concerned. So it's a huge event, especially this time of year. You know, I touched on it last week. It's these one-off events become so much more important because, excuse me, there is no football. There, you know, basketball is winding down. There's no March Madness. So these one-off events like the Masters and you know, the NFL draft and the Triple Crown races, they become that much more important, giving people the reason to come back or sign up when they usually wouldn't. So, yeah, I mean, it's a huge event. You know, hopefully the Belmont will be just as big if there is a Triple Crown winner.
Dave, it's not worth getting choked up about. I know horse racing's a big deal, but take a deep breath, buddy.
Man, something's going on over here. I need some water or something. I'm on a roll with this NFL draft. I'm still jacked up about it, I guess. I don't know.
Well, you talk about it being a great time for people to get into the action and some fresh faces come out of the woodwork. I mean, what can our listeners expect? They may want to reload our account if the draft didn't go well, or maybe they haven't been in action since Super Bowl. Or for some of the new listeners that are just wanting to familiarize themselves with some of the things that BetOnline offers.
Yes, sir. Go over to promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard to learn about our 75% welcome bonus for Bet the Board listeners. Use promo code 75BTB on your first deposit, and you'll get a 75% sportsbook bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account, use promo code 35BTB for a one-time 35% sportsbook bonus. The max bonuses on those are $1,000. Again, that's promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
And Dave, when you talk about depositing, the quickest way for people to do that, Bitcoin, I assume?
Yes. Yeah, all sorts of ways to deposit, credit card, but, you know, Bitcoin's taken off. I mean, it's well, you know, literally too, about looking at the price, but more and more people are going over to Bitcoin just because it's so easy, so quick. When you win, you get paid the fastest, and it's the most affordable, no fees. So it's the most affordable for us, so it's most affordable for the bettors as well. So if you're not into Bitcoin yet, I recommend you get into it. It's the easiest way to move your money into in and out of the sports book.
Yeah, take advantage of some of the depositing options that are out there for folks who may not want to get themselves in action until Saturday. Dave, can't thank you enough for jumping on with us. Like always, good luck with all the Derby. I know we can expect a laundry list of matchups, some unique prop markets, and everything else. So encourage people to check out the site over the course of Thursday, Friday, and, of course, up until post, until we know who is going to wear the garland of roses in the 143rd running in the Kentucky Derby.
Yes, sir. And, again, you get that 7% horse race book rebate, so you're not going to get that at the track. So we got the 7% rebate. I'm going to go drink some water. Talk to you guys soon.
Dave Mason getting a little bit choked up there. Apparently, Island Life, it's a little bit drier, and maybe some saline slowing him down there, Payne.
I think he just got back in from a walk. He was mentioning some nice lady on the beach that he ran into that was in town on vacation.
Yeah, I'm always curious to know what goes on these walks, but I think that might be a different podcast, and we might have to cue like the Red Shoes Diaries type music around these parts.
No doubt about it.
I mean, I just don't know if kids even know what Red Shoe Diaries are these days. Oh, I feel like we're not even going to get into that. So I don't want to digress completely. When we look at the Kentucky Derby, Payne, from a professional better standpoint, we'll kind of close on this. How do the pros view a race that's somewhat wide open? You know, Felica hit on it. He said you can look to try and capture a long shot. We know favorites have won the race each of the last 4 years, but there's some money-making opportunities. But professionals don't always run towards these mass marketed events where it almost feels like a coin flip from time to time.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I know Felica seemed to have a strong opinion on the Derby. He liked the openness of it. All the guys that I talk to think the Derby is just an ultimate crapshoot. They're obviously going to be involved, but they're going to be much more heavily invested in other races potentially going on that day if the weather looks great. You kind of know in terms of the horse racing information, you don't know when it's coming. I usually get a text. Could be once a month, could be once every 6 months, and usually they're finishing in the top two. So I'm not the horse guy, but I do get some information from time to time, and those guys that I speak with this week, they're not going to be too heavily invested in this thing. They'll focus on some of the prop markets with a lot of the matchups. You know, when you factor in matchups, has less hold percentage, but also you have two chances to win, right? So if you're trying to pick the winner of this race, he's got to perform exceptionally well and win the race for you to catch or coming in second and third. But if you delve into the matchups, you have two opportunities to win, whether it's your horse that looks fantastic or the guy you're fading just absolutely stinks. So that's where they're going to be attacking this a little bit more if they don't see a clear-cut edge on picking a winner.
Yeah, and you talk about it all the time. When you look at this, there are great ways you can either bet on a horse or bet against. And we've seen professional bettors maybe even gravitate more towards betting against certain horses. You talk about hold percentage. Dave mentions the 7% rebate that BetOnline offers in their horse book. And people all the time, we talk about ourselves, low theoretical hold when you're looking to bet futures markets, especially here in the state of Nevada. 18 cents on the dollar goes to the house and the Racing Association. So not exactly the most glamorous way if you're looking to bet the ponies race in, race out. But for one Saturday a year, or at least throughout the course of the Triple Crown, I'll be honest, you know, I treat it like a recreational bettor. I'll carve out some money, don't really care if I lose it, obviously want to win. But when I'm looking to try and bet in the parimutuel pools, know that I don't feel I'm giving myself the same edge as with the NFL, college football, the NBA, NHL, NASCAR. I mean, you name it, the other sports, I treat it for what it is.
Yeah, no question about it. I'll dabble here a little bit. I probably will say this, my largest wager will be on the no for a Triple Crown winner. I just don't see that horse here. I'd have no issues, you know, tying up 14K at 1-7 odds and you know, making 15% on my money in 4 weeks. So
here we go. You talk about, you know, deep pockets and satchels of cash, and you go, it's not a drop in the bucket for me to tie up, you know, 14 dimes on a 1-7 investment.
It's, you know, if I can make 15% on my money in 4 weeks, sign me
up. I'd say that's a pretty good ROI. Not quite like Bitcoin, but it's close.
The other thing here is, you know, a lot of the horses that no one's bet anything yet officially from my side, but the guys that the horses they're talking about, the speed horses, if they do potentially win, they're not going to have a prayer to follow that up in the next two races. So that's partly behind this as well. I've seen this already leak out to as high as like 1-8, 1-9. So, I mean, that's kind of where I've decided to tie some of my money up. I'll throw some peanuts at, you know, maybe a winner or two, and that's about it for the Derby for me.
It's all about finding opportunity, whether it's in the Derby or any of the other sporting events that we dissect here on the Bet the Board podcast, especially with our expansion. Want to say that we do have that great article from Kentucky Derby J posted at bettheboardpodcast.com. Depending on when you're listening, make sure to check back frequently for some matchups. We'll try and get two or three that catch his eye to get you to the window there. But all in all, should be a fun weekend. Fastest 2 minutes in sports. Again, the 143rd running of the Kentucky Derby. So for Chris Felica, can't thank him enough for taking time out of his busy day to join us. You can follow him on Twitter at Chris Felica. Dave Mason with us as always at Dave Mason BOL. Payne Insider, who won't claim to be a horse whisperer but may turn into one this weekend, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. Payne, any final parting shots before we ride off into the sunset?
Go Penguins.
Go Penguins. Sidney Crosby, of course. Status will be interesting to monitor, but a stranglehold that they've put on the Washington Capitals. NHL playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs, call it what you will. The best postseason in all of sports, but I don't want to get off topic. So best of luck to all of you, our loyal listeners. Encourage you again to check the site, follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. And for all those folks with submissions we're looking to try and write here, check those inboxes. We'll be making some of those decisions in coming weeks. Best of luck Saturday from Churchill Downs. Hopefully we'll see you at the window.